This is the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. This episode is hosted by the Executive Director of Assist Church Expansion, Nathan Bryant, and his ministry colleague, Bart Blair.
Welcome to episode number 39 of the Revitalize My Church podcast. I'm Bart Blair, and I'm joined by the Executive Director of Assist Church Expansion, Mr. Nathan Bryant. Hello, Nathan.
Hey, Bart.
How are you doing today?
Doing very well. Yeah, except for that I'm sitting in Canada, and 2 days ago I was in California. It was 83 degrees, and now it's 5. So, you know.
Yeah, 83 degrees Fahrenheit. Is it 5 Fahrenheit in Ontario?
Yeah, at night. It's almost 10 now, so it's warming up. I mean, it's getting balmy. So.
Okay, well, by the time this episode is released, actually, most of the southern states will be probably in much warmer temperature. You will still probably be in cold temperature, so sorry about that. Yeah. But hey, we're not here to talk about the weather. We're here to talk about church and ministry. We've been producing this podcast for... how long has it been? We're going on 2 years. It'll be 2 years later this year. This is the 39th episode. We release two episodes every month, one on the 1st and one on the 15th. And our goal is really to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new, healthy future. You and I have been coaching churches through revitalization. I mean, we're pushing 10 years. We're not quite to 10 years yet, but we're getting close to 10 years that we've been working with churches that are navigating change. And we've learned a few things along the way. Some by paying dumb tax, some through front row seats.
Mostly by paying the dumb tax.
Well, we've had some front row seats of some situations and circumstances, and then we've been leaning in and learning from other leaders in other denominations, other ministries who are walking the same path that we are, and they're learning maybe similar or different lessons, and we're just trying to cherry pick from them. Today, we are starting what is essentially going to be maybe a two-part conversation that will probably lead to a more extended conversation, specifically related to conflict in the local church, conflict as it relates to church revitalization. Before we start into this conversation, Nathan, you and I were talking before we started recording about the difference between conflict and resistance in a church revitalization. You want to address that a little bit?
Yeah, because you know when you're coming into a church to bring change, there's going to be resistance, and that will have its own kind of conflict, but that's a different kind of conflict than what we're kind of talking about here. As a leader of the church, you're going to have to manage conflict. In fact, one of your primary roles as the leader is managing conflict and maintaining unity in the body. And that's a hard thing to do. It's difficult to navigate. So regardless if you're making change or you're not making change, you're going to have conflict in the church because you're dealing with people. And the resistance issue does have conflict related to it, but there are other things involved with that. So I think it's a better thing to have a separate conversation about resistance and how to manage resistance and move it forward, as opposed to like general conflict that's happening within the congregation as you are, you know, operating as the leader and trying to church to move forward.
Some of us are more sensitive than others. I'll just admit I can be a little bit sensitive to this. And my natural instinct, I think, is that when someone doesn't see my viewpoint or agree with me, that we're in conflict with one another. And that's not necessarily always the case. We may not be, you know, tracking on the same path towards the same direction. And there, that resistance may feel like conflict, but it's not necessarily conflict. However, if I don't handle that resistance well or properly, it can result in conflict. So we're going to table the resistance conversation for some upcoming episodes. So this is a great reminder that if you haven't subscribed wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, make sure that you do that so that you don't miss those future conversations. But we're going to dive in today and in our following episode on this topic of managing conflict or navigating conflict in the local church. In fact, I've titled this episode, it's a working title, maybe it's where we land the plane or not, but it's 6 keys to managing conflict in a church revitalization. Now, you've already hit on one of the first bullet points that we have in our notes here, and that is the reality is that conflict is normal in a church. It's not an exception. I shared with you a few minutes ago a graph that I found. I'll link to this in the show notes. It's a study that was done in the early 2000s by a Christian organization. They surveyed over 14,000 churches and found that 75% of them had experienced recently some sort of conflict. So conflict. I mean, you put people in an environment together, whether it's 200, 2,000, there's going to be conflict. Now, when you're in a revitalization scenario, you're automatically putting yourself into a situation that is rife for potential conflict. Change itself creates conflict. You've got a mix of longtime members with ideals and ideas and traditions and things that are important to them with new members and new vision coming into play. Power dynamics are often shifting in the context of those church revitalizations or a church renewal.
People have been doing those roles for many, many years, and they're going to have to make adjustments, and that's a big challenge.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that we see often is resource scarcity. There becomes sometimes a power play or conflict related to how we're actually using the limited resources that we have. I mean, I had a front seat for that you know, a church needed to release some of its resources for a specific thing, but there were people in the church that just couldn't imagine spending the money on that because that money had decades earlier been earmarked for something else that was probably never even going to become a reality. And then there's always sort of this, you and I, again, before we started recording, you started talking about communication. And I think when you get people together, there's always unspoken expectations when it comes to relationships, ministry, just the whole dynamic. And when people, generally speaking, people are not very good at communicating expectations or their feelings. No. And since they're not—
A lot of assumptions going on. Yeah.
A lot of assumptions happen. And so, you know, like the honest truth is, the average person in your church, like married couple, they fight probably a whole lot more than you think they do. Parents and children fight a whole lot more than they think. People fight at work. People fight with their neighbors. People fight with others driving down the road with them. They end up in road rage conflict, right? Because people just, you know, when they're not in your church building, they're a whole lot more sinful than you actually really realize. So, so conflict is inevitable.
I think when you talk about that conflict is inevitable, I think there has to be a clarity to the leader, because oftentimes leaders are coming in, they're thinking about where they want to go and what they want to do, and that's all awesome, but their primary responsibility is to maintain the unity of the body and to bring health and lead the congregation in the way forward. And that means they have to manage conflict. They have to take on the responsibility of resolving those conflicts so that unity can prevail. So I think it's not just a conflict is going to happen, but you as a leader need to take responsibility to make sure it's resolved and things are moving forward and there is a division in the body. And you're doing everything you can with you and the leadership team to resolve conflicts. It's so important and that you see it as your responsibility as the leader. Because anyway, we'll talk more about some of these other things. But
yeah,
I think some people take it as a surprise. Oh, there's conflict, or they think it's someone else's job to try to resolve conflict.
Yeah.
And maybe in terms of the integrity part of it and the right piece, it is probably someone else's job. But if nobody's doing it and it festers in the church, we're in big trouble. And so as a leader, it's something that we have to own, we have to take responsibility for and know that it's coming. And praise the Lord if it's not happening to you, but know that it's going to because you're dealing with human beings and you're one of them. So,
The study that I referenced earlier about the poll of the 14,000 plus churches, I found this document, which I'm going to link to in the show notes. And I think it was, you know, 3 or 4 months ago, you and I were kind of coaching a church that was going through a specific piece of conflict. And I was reading a book at the time, the author of the book, I can't remember which book it was, and I couldn't find it before we recorded today. But they printed in the book, published in the book, one of the graphs that's in this particular study that I'm linking to in the show notes. And this is what stood out to me. And this was the aha moment that I had, that of the 7 or 8 primary reasons for conflict in the local church, the one that pastors are most prepared to handle are the ones related to theological conflict.
Yes.
However, that topic was the lowest source for conflict in the church.
Yes.
The one that is most common is member behavior. That creates more conflict in the local church. And I think that's the one that pastors are least prepared to actually be able to navigate. They're really well prepared to handle it in their home with their kids, you know, and with their spouse. But when it comes to the congregation, it's a different ball of wax. And so what we want to do today is we want to kind of cut to the chase and give you listeners, those of you who are watching on YouTube, some principles or some key points that you can kind of lean into as it relates to managing conflict that arises out of member behavior. Now, again, the member behavior may come as a result of some of that resistance, or it may just come because you got knuckleheads in your church, because we all do. Yep. We're all broken, sinful, jacked up people. We got lots of those in our church, and they're going to do things that are sinful, and that sin is going to result sometimes in
conflict. And you can also make mistakes along the way and create issues, and you have to resolve those.
So here's key number one. We've already hit on this a few times, and we're going to hit on it one more time before we move on, and that is you need to face the reality that conflict will come. James chapter 1, James wrote, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds." Like, this is what every pastor is dreaming about, is the joy that comes from conflict in the church. But I tell you what, if you are able to navigate it and navigate it well, man, it is such a win for you in your congregation. If you're able to identify conflict, identify the source of it, and in a healthy, productive and proactive way, address it. Why don't you comment on that a little bit?
I always say, that's a big one, because lots of times people are avoiding the conflict and they're trying not to engage it. But conflict actually is an opportunity to bring unity and to get on the same page and to resolve maybe an offense that has happened for somebody and move people together. And so if we look at conflict as, you know, a personal attack against you or whatever, and it's a war, that's not, I think, how you should look at it. I think you need to look at it as, oh, we've discovered that this person actually doesn't like that, or hasn't had enough information on this, or has been offended, actually literally been hurt by somebody, and now we know. And so I think we need to look at conflict as an opportunity to actually deal with something that was under the surface, but now is at the top of the surface, and resolve it so that now we have better unity and love for each other moving forward. And I think if we look at it from that perspective, we're going to have a much better success at engaging it, for one, and for two, not see it as something so scary. Actually, it's going to help the church be better if we can actually resolve it in an effective manner.
As a leader, I think it's really important that you learn how to normalize conflict in the church, rather than treating it as if it's a catastrophe or a disaster,
right?
Because it is, right. It is a normal thing that's going to happen. You know, when you and I we coach pastors in their 20s, we coach pastors in their 60s, and it never fails to dumbfound me that guys who have 30 or 40 or 50 years of ministry experience can sometimes still be blindsided when there's conflict in their church. I mean, it's mostly because most of us are pretty idealistic. We really want to expect the best from people and for people. And when conflict arises, and it never seems to fail, that it's the people that you would at least expect the conflict to be coming from.
And that's where it hurts the most.
Yeah, to cause conflict.
Totally.
But as a leadership team, whether, you know, whatever your polity and your governance in your church is as a shepherd team, if you can recognize and understand that conflict is not, it's not a, the alarm bells don't need to go off. You need to have a plan, and that's what we're going to try to do in these next two podcast episodes, is help you develop a plan to what is our emergency response plan to a conflict in the church, whether that's conflict towards us as the leadership team, or conflict between people, or conflict, you know, however it may manifest itself. But normalizing it, expecting it to be there, not overreacting to it when it occurs, but having a balanced approach and preparing your leadership team to expect and plan for conflict when it arises.
And seeing it as an opportunity to bring unity to the body. I think it's a big...
Love that. Love that, Nathan. Yeah. Absolutely. Key number two is moving towards conflict quickly, but wisely. Ephesians chapter 4, you know, don't let sun go down on your anger. Give no opportunity to the devil. We want to make sure that we address it in a timely manner, but we need to make sure that we're doing so wisely. Don't let it fester.
I think of the passage where Jesus is talking about, hey, you're bringing your gift to the altar. If you know your brother has something against you, or you have something against your brother, stop worshiping God and go make it right with your brother. Yeah. Like, God's desire to see the church unified and people not to be an offense with one another is above worship. It's pretty wild, right? He's saying, no, leave the gift at the altar, go make it right with your brother, and then come back and worship me. So yeah, I think we have to be ready to make take action when we're seeing. I always say unresolved conflict creates more conflict. Mm-hmm. Right. So when you're not by pretending it doesn't exist, it's not an answer for solving problems. It's actually creating more problems. And so we want to be proactive. We don't want to be aggressive. I think that's the difference between the two postures that we have. We're looking to assume the best in people, looking at it as an opportunity to clarify and bring unity. And I would want that gentle engagement as we are working with people, because sometimes we're thinking the conflict is this, and really the person had this, right? Or it's something totally different. And so we just have to be changing our perspective and our heart as a leader as we engage people who have challenges and or having conflict with each other, to have a really positive, kind posture that's going to honor Jesus and it's going to unify the church. And I would even communicate that to the people as I'm engaging them. Hey, listen, I just want you to know that we want to do everything we can to honor Jesus and keep the church unified. So that's how we're going to proceed as we engage this together. As an opportunity to get closer with one another and get this thing out of the way.
I'm gonna speak three points, three truths about what happens when you have conflict in the church. The first is this: small conflicts escalate very quickly and create very anxious environments. So when you have, especially if you're in a church revitalization situation, chances are you've got a relatively small congregation, and it doesn't take long for people to begin to feel the tension and to feel the anxiety that has been created by whatever conflict is there. It casts a dark cloud over everything that you're trying to do and everything that you're trying to accomplish. The second truth is this: gossip will always fill the vacuum of leadership silence. Okay.
Exactly.
I've said this for years so many times. When people don't have information, when they don't have facts, they just make stuff up. They fill blank. They fill in the blanks.
And assume the worst.
They fill in the blanks. They make stuff up. And before you know it, this tiny little issue has become a snowball and it's huge. Yeah. And the final thing is this: as a leader, you got to recognize this. People are watching you and how you are handling the conflict and how you're handling the tension. And they're going to make a judgment about your authority as their pastor, as their leader, your competence, and your character based on the way that you address it or fail to address it. And so it's really important that you do so in a Christ-like manner, lots of grace, but with lots of expedience as well. Because again, the other two pieces here, if you let too much time pass, the thing can grow beyond your ability to actually manage it.
One more thing I would say in this space, Bart, is you know, we talked a little bit about it in the pre-conversation, was, you know, as a pastor, I would want the congregation to have a framework for conflict resolution. And I would be teaching Matthew 18 and understanding that. But one of the catchphrases that I was taught by Pastor Thornley, that I found, who was my mentor, was I think is a really great thing for people to get their head around to make it easier for them to understand what to do when there's conflict or offense, is that everything should go up, not out. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a problem, we're maintaining, we're always going to try to maintain the unity of the body and honor Jesus with our actions and behavior within the church. Well, anywhere, but the church especially. So when we have an issue, people go out. They go to all their friends and talk to everybody else about how bothered they are about whatever the issue is, escalate it to something huge, and now it's taking over the church when it may have been just something very simple. And it really isn't the proper way to do it. They need to go to the person who's been offended and then manage it upwardly. So anyway, that's, I think, a very simple phrase: to go up, not out, is easy for people to understand. And I think very helpful with getting after simplicity of Matthew 18.
Yeah, I like, there's a, just kind of three phases to reacting or responding to conflict. The first is pray. When you know that you have a circumstance or a situation that needs to be addressed, stop and take time to pray, whether that's you individually as a leader or you as the leadership team, take time to pray. Yeah. The second is process. This is one thing that I think a lot of leaders fail to do, but I really encourage you to do this, and that is write down exactly how you plan to handle the conflict. Don't try to fly by the seat of your pants and freewheel it. As great as an improviser as you might be in your expository preaching skills, when it comes to conflict management, you need to think through exactly what you're going to say, how you're going to say it, how you might potentially respond to a person's reaction based on how they may actually react. Plan it out, map it out. It may not go according to plan. In fact, it probably won't, but I think you'll do yourself a great favor in mapping that out. And then the third is just act. Make sure that you're scheduling a meeting with the person or the parties within 48 to 72 hours of the time that the conflict arises. I think you can be too quick on these things and not give yourself enough time to pray through it and think through exactly how to handle it. But also, you can wait too long. And I think I probably should have incorporated this as separate steps, but I'll just throw this out here. I think any type of conflict resolution requires sort of two phases. The first phase is merely fact-finding. When you're addressing conflict with people, the first thing that you need to do is just go in with a listening posture. And especially if you have two different parties, or perhaps you are one of the parties that's involved in that conflict, you need to go in with a listening posture and you need to be an incredible interviewer and ask a lot of questions and get all of the what people perceive as the facts. Then you formulate a plan for reconciliation and restoration from that. You can't go in and expect a reconciliation or a restoration or repentance in your first meeting, especially
already having prejudged the situation before you listen to it.
100%. You heard one person's part of the story, and you may or may not know all the facts. But here's the reality: especially if you're mediating two different parties that are in conflict with each other, both of them believe their side of the story more than they believe the other person's side of the story, and you have to be super sensitive to that. One person may be right, the other person may be wrong, but the wrong person is still right in their own mind, and you have to figure out how to navigate that in a very gracious, kind, and pastoral way. Might not be my primary gifting, but I try. I try. Okay, third and final point for today's episode is this. Key number three is go face-to-face. Now, you've referenced Matthew 18 multiple times already. If your brother sins against you, go tell him his fault between you and him alone. Now, between you and him alone, we're going to talk about this a little bit more, about whether or not you should take someone with you, depending on what the conflict is and what that surrounds. Yeah. But we have seen things blow up when conflict has been dealt with via email or text message or even a phone.
The worst.
Right. Never. Absolutely. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, Nathan?
Oh, I see it so much. And I think it happens a lot with leaders who aren't, don't have the understanding that they have to manage conflict, and that's part of their role as the leader. And so they don't embrace that role, and they will get on the phone, or they'll try to resolve it through text and not a face-to-face meeting. And face-to-face is difficult. Lots of times it's difficult to get to meet with them. But you need to do everything you can to have a face-to-face engagement when you're dealing with real conflict, because man, there's a lot of things that people think about and take words that you text or write in, or you'll say something through a text that you never intended it to be this way, but now it's a public piece of information that will then be, who knows what they'll do with it. So you are fraught with all kinds of problems and heading down the total wrong way to manage conflict if you're going to do it through text or through email or through a phone call. You absolutely need to go face-to-face and engage that person 100% of the time, in my view. Like, unless it's really minor and you have a massive relationship with that person, maybe you could get over it with a phone call. But
yeah,
to me, 99.9% of the time, it's much better to, because your goal isn't just that it's done. The goal is that we're actually unified and better moving forward together as God's family. That's what we're looking for. So Just see it that way, and you're it's part of being a shepherd. So
that's quote of the day right there. It's not just about getting it done. It's about getting it done and bringing unity to the situation. And you know, you talk about, like, I sat in a room with a group of people that had some conflict over, really, it was started out of a text message that was sent. And here is the irony of it. I had two different people read that text message to me. One was the person who sent it, and one was one of the people who received it. And their reading of the text message was totally different. Yes. And when I heard it read by the person who sent it, I thought, well, that's not that bad. Then I heard a person who received it read it, and I thought, oh my goodness, that really didn't come across the way that he intended it to.
Yes.
And you know, and here's the other thing you've said this, you emphasized, get a meeting, get a face-to-face meeting, get a face-to-meeting meeting. If you are the pastor, it's your responsibility to chase people. Yes. When there's conflict, especially if that conflict might be directed towards you in some way, it's not enough to send a text message or an email and say, hey, I'd like to meet. Are you available on Thursday night at 7? No response. And then you just go, well, I reached out and I tried to meet them and they didn't want. No, it's as the shepherd of the congregation, as the leader of the family, you have an obligation or a responsibility to chase it. And especially if part of that conflict is on you, it's up to you to do all things that you can to be at peace with everyone, right?
And so I want to go back to that same passage. I mean, leave your gift at the altar, stop worshiping God, and go make it right with your brother. Go make it right with your brother.
Yeah.
And so,
Conflict is all, even if we don't necessarily always want to think about conflict as being relational, because sometimes the conflict comes as a result of something that seems super practical or matter of fact, but it's always relational. There's always emotions and relational stuff going on underneath there. And therefore it requires relational space and time in order to actually come to some resolution. So, you know, the face-to-face opportunity, it gives you a better chance to get genuine reconciliation rather than just sort of this matter-of-fact perfunctory, okay, we said the things we were supposed to say, we did the things we were supposed to do, and we move on, sweep it under the rug, and pretend that it never happened. No, you really do need to have that. I mean, we're family, right? A family, spiritual family, you've got to have, you know, there needs to be a handshake or a hug at the end of it, and you can't do that with a text message, right? Now, Nathan, before we started recording, you said, hey, I it's really important to you to think that when you're going and you're trying to navigate some sort of conflict, that you bring someone else with you. Now, obviously, you know, Matthew 18 starts with, you know, go alone, talk to this person. How do you navigate that tension in the church
with one another.
Yeah.
But when you're coming as a leader representing the leadership of the church to manage conflict down or with people up, they're dealing with it up, I always recommend that you bring an elder with you, and sometimes two, because you want to have a witness in the room for what was said, what wasn't said, what was the tone, and someone need to keep you in check to make say, no, you were out of line in how you reacted and what you said to this person. And so you're not coming back to the elder team and it's all, you know, one-sided story. You're actually, you know, you're accountable, everybody's accountable, and we're having an honest conversation, and we're dealing with it in a way that's going to be in the light, and not necessarily that it's public to everybody, but it's in the light of more people's purview than just the people in the room. Because oftentimes most people are passive, and they become passive aggressive, and they have stewed on something for a very, very, very long time. And I say they make their own tape about what the story is that could be somewhat have some reality to it. It could have no reality to it whatsoever, but they have played that tape so many times in their mind that they think that is the truth. And they are like totally, you know, and I learned that doing a lot of marriage counseling. It's like, oh, wow, are these people in the same home having the same conversations? Because what she's thinking, what he's thinking are like two different lives and worlds, but they have their own story, you know? So just know that when you're starting to engage a person, especially if the conflict has spread a bit, you want to manage that with other people involved. You're not doing that alone, and you're doing it respectfully and kind and gracious, looking for restoration and all those things. But you're also protecting yourself from what he said, she said, you said. You want to make sure from the very beginning of navigating through, especially a challenging conflict, that you're not in the middle of that by yourself. You're doing that in team with your elders, and there's somebody with you helping you navigate that and to make sure that things are in the light.
just to kind of put a button on this, if I were sitting in the shoes or sitting in the seat, walking in the shoes of someone who's listening to this, this is the takeaway that I would give you. I would establish a covenant with your leadership team would basically have the, at least out of this podcast episode, three key points. One is we're going to commit to having a meeting with persons involved in conflict within 72 hours of finding out about it. We're going to do everything in our power to do so. That's a covenant we're making to each other. Number two, we're going to make a covenant to meet face-to-face and not use digital communication. In fact, that would actually go so far as to say, we are agreeing that we will not resolve conflict through digital means. It will always be face-to-face in person communication. And I can't remember what the third one was. That was pretty good. Those two right there, even if you walk away and you don't have anything more, those two, just make those two commitments.
That I think you want to have another person involved in mediating the conflict. That would be the third piece.
Yeah, exactly. So to kind of put a button on this particular episode, we talked about three specific things. Number one, face reality. You're going to experience some sort of conflict. Expect it and normalize it and don't overreact to it in the context of your church. Second, move towards it quickly but wisely. Address things within a very quick and swift time manner, but do so graciously and methodically. And finally, do it face-to-face. Whenever possible, make sure that you're meeting face-to-face. I mean, sometimes you might have to Zoom with somebody, but man, if you can do it face-to-face, it ought to be face-to-face. That's going to be it for this particular episode, but we're going to continue this conversation next month. So for those of you who haven't yet subscribed, make sure that you subscribe. Otherwise, there's a chance you missed this, and this was really good stuff, and we don't want you to miss it. And also, if you think that this episode might be helpful for someone else that you know, please make sure that you share it. We're here providing this content free of charge, and hopefully you find some value in it. We're not asking anybody to pay for it. Our supporters for our ministry pay for our time so that we can do this for you. We want to make this available and accessible to as many churches and as many church leaders as we can, because we really do love the local church. We believe in the local church, and we believe that the best way for us to see the local church expand the kingdom of God, the gospel footprint in America, is preserving churches and not letting them die. We don't want your church to die.
Amen.
And churches die over conflict. So let's try to resolve that. Any parting words, Nathan?
Well, there's so many parting words to give in this particular case, but I would just say, as leaders, one, take responsibility to make sure you maintain the unity of the body of Christ. There's nothing that God wants more than his people dwelling together in unity. And it's so important that you are the one who's the leader to take responsibility to ensure that happens. And be very, as we're talking about these things today, you know, don't look at conflict as a negative. Look at it as an opportunity to restore that person and to unify the body, and to look at it as the positive that it can become. Now, sometimes, of course, conflict can lead us, but if we can manage it properly and get on it quickly, we're going to find we're going to be ahead of that most of the time. There are times when you're dealing with people who who just aren't reasonable, but you know, I would say, you know, really take responsibility for it, and then also look at it as a positive thing. I think those are the two big things I want you to consider as you navigate this space, which we all have to as leaders. No matter what your organization you're leading, you're going to have conflict.
All right, we will call that done. This has been the 39th episode of the Revitalize My Church podcast, part one of six keys to managing conflict in church revitalization. We'll see you next time.